You're listening to TechNest,
the Prop Tech Podcast.
In each episode, you'll hear from prop tech founders, investors, and industry veterans on how they're using tech to change the way we buy, sell, and invest in real estate. Discover market opportunities, interesting data, growth tactics, and trends driving the industry forward. This isn't just another podcast about making money in real estate.
This is about how we live.
And now your host, Nate Smoyer.
Pat, welcome back to the show.
Excited to be here. Repeat. Any other repeats?
There's been a few repeats over the years.
I thought I was so good. I was the only one.
I think there's actually one person that maybe have been on the show three times, one or two, but very few have come back for round two. Well, I shouldn't say have come back. That sounds like no one like wants to come back.
No, I was psyched. I mean, for folks listening, since I did it in, I think 2019, I've had a lot of prominent investors and analysts and other folks say they heard that episode that you and I did together, and it was actually great for our business. We had, a really thoughtful conversation that I keep hearing people enjoy it, so I was excited to come back.
I'm stoked to hear that. So I have on the show with me today the one and only Pat Kinsell. He's an experienced entrepreneur. I believe the story is you sold your previous one of your early startups while riding in a rickshaw to Twitter. Is that how the story went?
We're merging stories there, but okay. I sold a previous company to Twitter, and I sold that from the back of a taxi cab in Korea, actually. But ultimately, the documents that I needed to be notarized, I went to the UPS store, and the person screwed it up. I didn't catch it. A couple weeks later, as so many people in the real estate industry are familiar, the compliance department caught it. And then we had to do basically curative docs, the equivalent. And it was a huge, huge pain in the butt. It took weeks. And I said, this is ridiculous. And here we are 9 years later.
Yeah. And so that led to the start of a company called Notarize. And we're going to get into this because that's what the company was known as when we did our first interview. And now the company is going by the name of Proof. And there's, you know, in my own little bit of diligence and some of the notes that I got here, there's a bigger underlying story here. This isn't just a logo change and, you know, name change, domain change, which, you know, from the marketing perspective, sometimes that's the thing to do and that's helpful. But this one is actually a much bigger story. So let's start there. Why take the rebrand from Notarize to Proof? And I'm just going to, and I'll interject here as well, because Notarize, what a name. It literally is the thing you have to do. You owned the name, you own the brand, the domain. So why would you walk away from that?
Yeah. So we haven't walked away from it necessarily. So we still use Notarize as our consumer brand. So we have a lot of fantastic partnerships with FedEx, with Staples, with places like that. And so when a consumer is looking for, you know, a digital notary solution, we have the brand Notarize. And what Notarize, you know, means to us today is it's the world's largest online notary network. And so anyone who wants to connect with the world's largest online notary network can do that with Notarize. We answer calls in less than 1 second, which is remarkable. So if you think about, you know, you're trying to get a transaction done, the convenience to the consumer, but also what that means for your business. Like you can design a business process that like right now, instantaneously, you can connect and you can get a transaction done. But, you know, we rebranded our business product to Proof. And if you think about what a notarization is, you know, we've said for now 9 years, we serve life's most important moments, right? So buying a house, a car, transferring assets, you know, medical, you know, rights and authorizations, you know, these are really critical agreements. And really what we have done by virtue of leading the category and passing the legislation is we've put all of this compliance logic into the platform. And we've had customers increasingly ask us like, hey, I want all of this benefit for things that aren't notarized, right? I want identity verification. Mm-hmm. I want secure records, right? Mm-hmm. I want to meet my compliance obligations, right? And so we started looking at our platform really for the value that we were providing businesses, which was, you know, trust and security in critical agreements, right? And we started having customers ask us, you know, can you do an auto closing? You know, that's IAL2. That's very close with that. For the eye, it's a very geeky identity standard, but it's close to notarization, but not quite, right? And really, we realized like what we do is we provide trust and certainty in critical transactions. And that's really for businesses the mission that we're fulfilling. And so we decided to rebrand our business product to Proof. I also love buying domains. So I got proof.com and notarized.com. So if there's ever a third product, you know, it's going to find a domain. But and honestly, the customer's feedback was really validating about the strategy. You know, we started hearing from some of the banks we work with, oh, thank God, because like I'm talking to the rest of my colleagues about all these other use cases. And the name Notarized, like, you're right, we did a good job building that category and brand. It has a strong association. They say, I don't need to do a notary or notarization. And then I know this is a long answer, but the last thing I'd say is that, you know, I believe notaries are critical for the future of identity, period, in society, right? And there's a lot of debate now around, you know, how to do identity proofings and who should do them. And I believe notaries should do them, right? And so we want people to leverage Notarize, the world's largest online notary network, also for identity verifications. These are trusted agents with training and insurance and bonding and background screenings. They're the right group to do it. So we felt these two brands was the right way to go forward.
I love it. And you know, again, kind of think it through. Like, I think this is a great learning point for early stage founders. As you're thinking about the vision of what you're building and the story that goes with it. Again, this is just more than a rebrand to me. It just kind of like helps capture the vision. Because for all intents and purposes, I don't know anything about ID verification. Like, I do not use the facial recognition on my iPhone. I get a little paranoid about that. And I, you know, and you brought up trust. Like, I do not trust LinkedIn enough to go and verify my LinkedIn profile, like as an example here. But this creates problems, right? And you know, on social media, it's one thing to, you know, verify who you are. And we've seen that it's not exactly a perfect system there. But when we talk about high stakes transactions, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, the bar just went up. And so being able to verify who is who. And of course, over the last few years, we've seen the acceleration of remote transactions, specifically in real estate. My house I bought, we were under contract without ever seeing it. You know, it wasn't until it took a flight out here, but I really didn't even need that part to come see the house. You know, it was just like a final sanity check on the neighborhood. So talk to me a little bit about like what that's been like, you know, working on solutions to increase trust in transactions, creating those products during a time where adoption was by, you know, had just an insignificant, you know, tailwind moving it forward.
Yeah. I mean, if I could maybe provide a little context on kind of the way we see the world right now. So I think you hit on exactly right. Like, people are now doing transactions remotely. I think it's even more existential than that, which is that, you know, people don't even know who they're doing business with.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you think about, you know, the banks in the world today, the title companies, the mortgage lenders, like, they literally don't know. They've never met the people that they're transacting with. They didn't come in to open an account. They open an account digitally, right? So they don't actually have a trusted relationship with these people. And like, that's a very fundamental change in society. Funny enough, we did this thing where we used AI and we described a real estate transaction. We put it in the year 2500 and it still gave back the exact same concept of people sitting around a table, right? So it's just what people think. It's what the Borg has been trained to think, right?
Right.
That's not how we're transacting. And you know, like, Cash App has more consumers on their mobile app than JP Morgan. So it's not just that digital first is accelerating. It's that the players that have embraced digital first are winning. I mean, JP Morgan is obviously a larger company, but there's more consumers that have signed up for that, right? So it's a fundamental change in the way the world works, right? And if you think about all the investment that's been made, people talk a lot about KYC and AML, and that's predominantly a financial services term, but that's about when you're opening an account, right? But what about once you've opened the account and everything's been entrusted to you as an organization, right? You're a retirement company that has people's 401k. You're a bank with people's assets, right? You know, you are, you know, a title agent managing an escrow account, like whatever it may be, right? And so how can you trust the people that you're interacting with in those scenarios? FinCEN just came out with a report that said in 2021, the amount of identity-related fraud exceeded $200 billion. That's a number that's an order of magnitude, you know, 10x what others report. And the, you know, two of the top three categories were impersonation and false records. We're not talking enough about the records, right? So if you're a you know, mortgage underwriter and you're looking at someone's income and assets and verification of employment, if you are a county recorder thinking about, you know, transferring, you know, ownership and the deed and whatnot, or quick claim deed, whatever it is, it's not just can you trust the person, can you trust the content that's produced in those scenarios? And AI, you know, I frankly believe might destroy everything, right? The synthetic identity fraud, the synthetic content that's being created now puts at risk, frankly, all of it, right? And so people we are working with really see that this is an urgent problem. And for us, you know, we've been so, you know, focused on notarizations, but really securing these transactions. We made a huge investment in spotting all these different, you know, vectors of fraud and risk and identity theft. And then what proof is, without geeking out too much, is we sign things in a way that they're provably associated with you, Nate, right? So like we can prove that you are identified and that you signed this thing and you did it. So now your title company, you're looking at this document, right there, you can say, I know that Nate signed this thing, right? And we think that that's a fundamentally improved, you know, paradigm for trust, you know, in the world at large.
Yeah, there's so many different directions I want to take this. There's been a handful of other people that have been on the show, whether they were building like a real estate auctions platform, you know, a next to instant mortgage, even those that have been trying to do real estate transactions with blockchain or crypto. The biggest challenge that kept coming back up is like, how do you know who is who actually? Because that's especially, you know, any sort of like county records and stuff like that, and records back to a bank, and that's what people have to know who they are with definitive reason. And even as you were talking there, I was thinking, I was like, we own property in four different states. I have never met anyone for any of my loans, not one of them. And that, so like that goes back to 2015. So, you know, it's like, you're totally right. Like there is no face-to-face with that. So that trust has to be there. I want to come back to the AI piece because I want to talk more about that and get into what are some of the risks. I think right now the buzz is about all the ways you can use it to grow your business. But I don't know, we've really had a great discussion going into the risks. But before we do that, let's unpack the fraud piece. There's multiple different types of frauds. You already brought up, there's like identity theft, you have records fraud. On the show, we've talked about handful times of wire fraud. So maybe you can unpack the different types of frauds that are occurring in real estate. Let's start there.
Yeah, I would maybe give three categories. I think everyone's pretty familiar with wire fraud. And this is your classic, you know, I worked at Microsoft, I took my security training. So either spoofing, you know, something to that effect, but you get involved in someone's email, you pretend to be someone else, you send the bad information and someone wires their money away, right? Look, for this audience, I think everyone should recognize that the amount of wire fraud is way, way greater than what's being reported, right? It's a much larger problem than what's being reported. I feel like that's pretty well understood by this audience. So I think the other two are worth talking about more. And I kind of classify them as like sci-fi fraud and then deed fraud, right? So the sci-fi fraud, it's actually happening. It's not science fiction, but you know, as a moniker, it's the AI synthetic identities. And the gist of it is that people now can use software and technology to generate a person who does not exist, but can get through a lot of the systems that banks and other people have. And they pick off enough data, enough pieces to generate someone who kind of looks like Nate, but with different, you know, questions so that you can get through. And the other thing that's happening now is people can generate a fake driver's license and they can generate a fake video avatar that looks like that driver's license. So if you think about trying to close on someone's home or anything, you know, it's pretty scary stuff. And to solve that problem, you know, we feel on our platform we have, but to solve that problem, it takes an enormous investment and different software to identify issues in the video feed or the underlying data. So that's not an unsolvable problem, but it's a huge problem. And the technology is getting better. It's not science fiction. You can go on the internet today and you can download software to create a fake. I could, in 30 minutes right now, be talking and look exactly like you.
Right? Yeah. Did you see the one where the, I pulled it up to convert, like pull up the story, but I think it was last month. There was a CFO was on a call and everyone else on the call was a deep fake video who he thought were his coworkers.
Yes.
And it was so convincing in the meeting that he ended up wiring out $25 million.
Yes. And if you think about during COVID, you know, there was a huge push by the real estate industry to adopt what was called RIN. And so what I do is RON, remote online notarization. And people were pushing for what was called RIN, which was remote ink notarization. And you just would get on video and you would not have an electronic document or you would not have electronic identity verification. But you're just like, hey, Nate. Okay, I see you. And then I would actually sign in paper and FedEx. And we adamantly fought against that and said, for exactly these reasons, like it's just looking like someone's not enough, right? So this typical security practices of, you know, something you have, something you know, something you are, you know, biometric analysis, looking at underlying data around synthetic identity, behavior patterns, right? There's all sorts of things that you have to do to have a comprehensive approach. So we feel we have. But I think, frankly, the industry is both not focused enough and too focused on this problem, right? Like they're talking about it too much, but not doing anything, right? People need to make a real investment in technology to solve that problem. They could use our solution. There are others, you know, we think we've got the only end-to-end solution, but there's other technology they could procure. There's deed fraud. And I feel like deed fraud is getting, you know, conflated with everything else that's going on. And so a lot of people probably don't realize that county recorders across the country in many states not only do not have an obligation, but they do not have a right to assess what's being submitted them to record. So they will record whatever is presented to them, right? So what's happening now with seller side fraud, you said you own property in four states.
Right.
Someone is pretending to be you in Arizona or wherever you own the place. They're walking into the county recorder with a fraudulent quitclaim deed. They're going to the public records and they're just photoshopping an image of what a notary stamp looks like. And they're putting it on that and they're submitting it. And your house is being sold out from under you. And 6 months later, a year later, 2 years later, you finally go to sell it. And the county's like, you don't own it. And that's ridiculous, right? And people are starting to say, well,
what?
Yes. And people are saying that problem is associated with AI. It has nothing to do with AI. That's good old fashioned paper based. It's entirely paper based fraud that's occurring. And what I position is what people have to do is actually connect data from the transactional platforms into data for the recording platforms. Mm. So you can trust that what was signed by Nate and Nate owns the house. Right. And the challenge is that some of the regulations today say the county recorders are not even allowed to assess, you know, the instrument that's being recorded. So I think that, you know, as an industry, people need to look hard at this and what, you know, I'm your classic American. I believe that a mortgage is the path to wealth, and I believe property rights gives you a stake in society. And this is an existential, you know, thing for us as a country, that how can people have certainty that, you know, that someone can't go record their house out front underneath them?
I was not aware of that. That's the first time anyone has ever shared that with me. Now I'm going to be looking for all the the horror stories. But
I joke. I'm the dude where I chase weird forms to the end of the earth. So, you know, but this is an issue that people are, you know, looking about and talking about, and it's not unknown. But, you know, the reality is that, look, of course I'm going to say this, but the solution is technology. Like the solution is us to move away from, you know, paper-based processes where someone hands you a piece of paper. What the hell is this? Like, I don't know who signed it. I don't know where it came from. I don't know if it's an original. I don't know anything, right? Versus, you know, secure systems with chain of custody and audit logs and identity verification and video recordation. And that's why I'm, you know, advocating so hard for all this change.
Yeah. Let's go a little bit more tactical here then with the verification of as to who is who, right? So that you could connect those dots. What is the solution from Proof's perspective of like, how do you verify someone? You mentioned biometrics. I mean, let's go into that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, look, it depends is the short answer, right? So really what we now have is a system that can assess various types of risk, and we always meet the baseline of the legal requirements, right? So, you know, various states have different requirements for Iran, right? Mm-hmm. But now we know how to go beyond that, right? So we know how to assess underlying, you know, risk signals on the platform. And then with a lot of our customers, we agree to what steps they want us to take. And at the end of the day, some of these things are risk, you know, based decisions, like, you know, and how do we give our customers visibility,
mm-hmm.
right? So did someone come in and out multiple times and try different attempts? Does their phone, you know, have an IP address that's not associated with something else? Is their phone at risk of being SIM jacked or email compromised? Like these sorts mm-hmm. of things, right? You know, we have the ability to do all those things now. And then we ask the title underwriter or the bank or whatnot, like, you know, what do they want to do? And then think about the practical steps. If you have if you're a bank with an existing relationship with someone and you also know their spouse, like they're, when you think about orchestration, you can do things to, you know, pull in other folks and check other, you know, identity or ask for additional data, compare it against known, you know, I don't want to say everything, right? These things work largely because they're black boxes, but we feel really confident mm-hmm. in our ability to do that and to give people confidence in the transactions. And it's frankly an endless pursuit. We'll be working on this forever, right? Go beyond that, though. I don't know if a lot of people know this, but like if you use a standard e-signature platform, the document is not signed by the person that you're sent it to. It's signed by the platform, right? So mm-hmm. if you use DocuSign or Adobe Sign and you get it back and you look at the file, it says signed by DocuSign. It doesn't say signed by Nate.
Interesting.
So Proof is the first platform. When you open it up, it says signed by Nate. And that's because we have met all of these standards for identity verification, web trust audits, you know, the way we store the data and validate it and things like that. And so we're the first company that's met that standard. The challenge with these things, if you're a title agent, like you don't want a new damn system. You just want to be able to open the thing and like, it's good. Mm-hmm, right? So mm-hmm. because we mapped all of these existing standards, it took us years, but we mapped all these existing standards. You just get this green check mark, right? And it's, and you're good to go.
I want a green check mark. I actually would like verified on my driver's license now that I think about it. That would be kind of cool. I just wanted to be verified every time I walk around.
I verify you. It's only valid for this podcast, but.
Fair enough. All right, let's dig into AI, right? Every conversation I've had, right? I've been on a few panels last year. And of course, I ask everyone who comes on the show the last, you know, few months, what do you know with AI? How's AI working here? We hear everything from like streamlining communications. You know, we use it at roofer.com. We're using it to analyze roofs and find damage. Some people are using it for drawing up work orders and contracts. I just did a demo yesterday where it's voice AI for customer service. So they pick up the phone right away and through some information you give it, it can actually do a really good phone call and book an appointment for, you know, your customer service intake. But what are some of the risks you mentioned about, like, there seems to be some risks AI poses to, you know, increasing, if you will, fraud. And quite frankly, if county clerks are just operating off a paper-based system, you know, what could you knock? Like, what's, it seems like you could create any document.
Everything. I mean, you can create a bank statement. You can create, you can already do these things. I mean, one of the things that was interesting very early on is I had a conversation with someone at the IRS and they said, we're trying to turn enterprise fraud into retail fraud. And they said, we're trying to think about, you know, the friction or experience we'll put people through so that someone can't submit 100,000 fraudulent tax returns. I guess that's what people do if you're some state actor or some, you know, whatever criminal enterprise, you submit 100,000 fake tax returns and maybe 2,000 get through, right?
Wow.
And so how do you put friction and process?
I can barely do one a year.
I know, me too. But, you know, the point being, so what AI represents is suddenly people's ability to do things is at infinite scale. If you think about your concept of a denial of service attack, where people like send a million requests and try to take down your site, AI means that people can now do that. People can try to, you know, send a million requests into wire money out through fraudulent means, right? And so the sophistication is and scale. It's a scale problem, right? and they can build a whole trail of information across a variety of services. So it's a huge problem, right? And the way that, but that said though, like a lot of these are largely solved problems in technology, right? So when you have technology, you use encryption. When you have services that talk to each other, they sign it, right? There's mm-hmm. protocols so that my app can sign content going to AWS. AWS knows that they can trust my app, right?
Mm-hmm.
Da, 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 right? So frankly, my view is actually this isn't as scary as people think. It's just what we have to do is figure out how to take these security technologies and bring them into a world where you can use them, right, as an individual. You know, a lot of people have tried to use like a YubiKey. That's this little USB key you walk around with. No one is ever going to do that as a consumer, right? So
who does what?
Literally, exactly. It's a little dongle you stick in your computer, right? If you work at like a major bank and, you know, they might make you do that. And so what I really take pride in as a company is I feel like what we've done is we've commercialized a lot of these things for consumers. And we've figured out how to build product experiences where someone not only can, but will do it. You talked about not wanting to go through LinkedIn's experience, right? We've built a product experience where you have to buy your house online, and we've got people in their 80s and 90s and they get through it every day, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do now is take these frameworks of the security industry, bring them into the consumer world to sign content so that it can be trusted, you know, to combat this AI problem. So, this isn't a problem without a solution, but people do need to pay attention, and we do need to be sure that the standards and the practices, you know, keep up with it. If I can take some liberty with your question,
go for it.
I think another thing that's not being discussed enough, and you know, I have the good fortune of going to some of the big banks. They have these strategy offsites, right? And because we're a vendor now, I get to go. And I think what people don't appreciate with AI is how much the government is afraid of systemic algorithmic bias, right? And if you think about appraisers, last time we talked about appraisers, right? That was my hot take. You know, the government would rather there be human appraisers with all of, you know, the challenges, including racial bias, doing this because you might get lucky, you might get unlucky one day, right? Versus a system that's coded in a way that has a systemic bias in it, which is opaque and can't be audited. And I think, you know, for these systems to go out of task automation, a lot of what you talked about was task automation, right? And into being foundational platforms, you know, as industries, we have to solve this problem, which is, you know, what was it trained on, right? And what assumptions is it making? And I think the Google thing that just happened with, you know, their AI appliance, where it came out with all this ridiculous, racially ridiculous stuff, I think it's very eye-opening, which is these systems, like what goes in determines what comes out. And as an industry, can we really put credit underwriting and the like into these systems? It's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah, I mean, obviously some of the – look, any early product is going to have challenges. But I think that everyone expects Google, because you are Google, whose mission is to organize the world's information, to be a little bit more forward along in some of their AI tools. And, you know, some of the examples is just of what their tool wasn't able to create. And insult to injury, I don't know if you saw the one of their engineers was just arrested for stealing company secrets.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, same thing happened with Waymo and Uber and the like. I mean, I don't know. They have so many employees, I kind of chalk those things up to. There's always maybe a bad apple in the cart. But I am they got caught flat-footed. I think to me, I think one of the things with OpenAI and Microsoft is they finally had the guts to spend the money. Right. And and that's given them a huge advantage. You know, my background at Microsoft, I did work on some search systems. And the thing that you learn working on a search system is if it's built correctly, it compounds. And the click data, you know, people search, they click, they go back, they found what they needed, they didn't find what they needed. And that training of user behavior and activity, and it's why Google in traditional search has never been able to be caught. I think about that in my platform. You know, we're now trying to look at, you know, notary performance and compliance. And that's why, frankly, I don't think I'll ever be caught. I mean, that's an arrogant thing to say, but like, I'm investing enough that we're trying to always be ahead. you know, shorter meetings, faster meetings, fewer errors, you know, like that's the amazing thing about SaaS and software. That's why I don't get why people sell their companies to private equity. By the time private equity is going to buy your company, they're doing it because they see that the business is compounding and it has an advantage, right? Like, you know, why sell? But, you know, Google's, they're in a hole. I don't know what they're going to do. It's above my pay grade.
Now, obviously some of the risks, couldn't you just use AI to counter all this stuff though? Couldn't you just use AI to fight AI and then you have infinite amount of army to fight the infinite amount of attack? Doesn't it just work that way?
Look, that question is above my pay grade, but you'd be surprised. I don't want to get into all the specifics, but like you'd be surprised how much, you know, human interaction actually can change these things. Like my vision for the future is the vast, vast majority of things should be able to be digital and automated, right? But you in some circumstances do need to have a human interaction, right? And even if it's simply because these are risk-based decisions and organizations want to, you know, have that as an out, you know, the federal government's thinking a lot about these things and they're very fearful of purely automated based processes for all the reasons that we've discussed, you know, systemic bias, equity and access. We don't talk enough about equity and access, right? You know, the reality is that some people don't have the technology to do these things. They might not have cameras sufficient to validate, you know, driver's licenses, whatever the issue may be. You know, the federal law says you can't mandate people through a digital process. You have to provide an out, right? So, you know, what the Notarize and Proof platform represents to customers is an enterprise solution, right? So there's a lot of people who have come along and say, I have a digital only solution, but then the bank or someone says, well, what about the 17% or 22% of people who can't go through that? And I say, well, great. You know, we have the technology and we have the notary network, right? Mm-hmm. And they are the trusted agent to make these determinations and to, you know, so it's an enterprise solution that can serve everyone.
I can dig it. I could keep riffing back and forth, especially on the AI piece, as I still want to keep learning into that and leaning into that. But we'll kind of put a pin in that for now. We might have to schedule the follow-up interview in a few years to see were we anywhere near correct on any of this, or did anything happen, or did we totally miss everything? I did want to talk a little bit about just in general, because of your experience as a founder and having building organizations, you've been up through ebb and flows in the industry. When you're thinking about being able to take a product that I don't know how much people are seeking out, they go and they type out like online proofing software, right? It seems like a category where unless someone tells you about it, you may not look for it, or a very specific executive knows this is a problem that we have to go find a solution for. For other founders who may be building products in kind of niches like that, what has worked? What have you seen work to take that product to market and to get the traction that you've been successful in achieving?
I mean, I've been doing this 9 years, and to your point, there's been highs and lows. You know, we've been hot, we've been cold, you know, I've been dead, I've been brought back to life. You know, I am, you know, so one is, you know, I would say whatever you're going after has got to be personally important enough to you and a big enough opportunity to stick through it, despite having periods of time where you obviously shouldn't, because there's no clear path to what you said. Like there's no magic bullet to going and selling a product and getting customers. And it just takes time and it takes a lot of pain and iteration. You know, that said, to offer whatever advice I could, you know, I think what's very compelling, you know, there's everybody else and then there's major banks in the enterprise, right? So for the everybody else category for us, I don't sell online notarization. I sell solutions, and I sell solutions against problems and verticals. You know, I reach out and I say, are you trying to digitize the auto sale? Trying to do a digital mortgage closing? You know, you trying to do an IRA distribution rollover, right? And so that allows us to have very pointed conversation with a business sponsor with a discrete ownership of something. And I don't sell that it's an online notarization. I sell, hey, I can digitize the spousal consent process, the account opening process, the auto loan closing process. And depending on what it is, I've got hard data. I'm going to save you 11 days, $75. I'm going to reduce errors by 30%. increase conversion rate by 22%, you know. And this is going to be the fastest, easiest thing you can implement this year to achieve your goals. So what are your goals? You know, you're trying to increase conversion. You're trying to cut costs. Like, you have a bunch of huge projects that take a long time. I can do this for you right now. I can do it for you today. Turn it on, right? Like, if you're in title industry, I'm integrated into Resware. Turn it on, right? Like, let's go, right? So I think being very pointed about this problem and being solution-oriented and talking about ROI, especially in this market, no one gives a shit that people like your product. It's very obvious that people like online notarization, right? So it's got to – I did a presentation to someone. They said, Pat, that's cool and all, but when did you get to the part about me saving money? And I was like, yeah, okay, good feedback, right? And I would say within the enterprise, like, I think I've had a very unique experience, which is probably not replicable. I am the notary guy. You know, we've passed
laws. Can I change your Twitter handle to that?
It's fine. I went to a conference and they put me as Pat Notarized. That was my last name. So, but I, you know, I've changed all these state laws and the federal policies. And if you just think about that in practice, like, we changed Texas way back in the day. And if you think about how that played out, like, the State Bankers Association got involved, and mortgage bankers and title, they, you know, they called their members, who called the National Association, who called the national banks, and they said, shit, well, we probably need a policy. So they had a policy committee, and they thought, you know, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, they thought about this. They had, took a position. They brought us in, not as a vendor conversation, but for information and research. And then we had regular meetings with them as we passed states. We talked about their issues, data access, record retention. What about witnesses and, you know, TPICS in Maryland? What about elder care laws? You know, like, so I just worked on it. And finally got to the point where everyone's like, yeah, we should do it. So who are they going to call? You know what I mean? The practical advice that I think people can probably take from this, because I don't think you can replicate that experience, is you have to be a partner to your customers, right? Especially in the enterprise. You're not selling them a solution. You're selling them on a vision and that they should want to work with you. And it's like, look, you know, I had a pitch to a very large bank, and I said, look, I said, I know you personally don't care about online notarization. I'm like, you're trying to digitize and secure transactions. I'm going to solve this for you. But if you're going to work with me, you know, I've got this 10-year plan, and you're going to make this investment in our partnership, and I'm going to continue to deliver for you and solve these other problems for you. And like, okay, like that's why they would bring you in, right? It's never for a solution. It's for the partnership, you know? And that's hard because you got to build a team around that. And people say, why do we keep doing stuff for so-and-so? And it's like, well, you know, we want them on our platform. You know, we want to be a partner. Your investors bitch about it, you know? So it's hard, but, anyway.
It's all good. I love it. Pat, we're going to shift to the bottom of the show. This is a game I believe you're familiar with. It's called For the Future. It's when I get to ask each guest who comes on the show to give their best predictions based on the following four questions. Ready to give this a go?
I'm always ready to go.
All right. First one here. What does proof look like 1 year from now?
Bigger, more. For this audience, everyone who watches Million Dollar Listing, Ryan Serhant, expand always and always. I love that. Love that quote. But no, I think for us, in 1 year from now, we will be seen much more like a security company than a digital transformation company.
Got it. Number two, this is a short term prediction as well. What are we likely to see as the volume? And look at dollar amounts of seller fraud in the U.S. for real estate transactions this year alone.
I'm forgetting the baseline, and it sucks because I looked at it right before this, and I talk about this constantly. But I know some customers that have told me that it's up 5x for seller-side fraud. I'm not sure the wire fraud numbers. This is a huge problem the industry is grappling with. Now, I don't know that everyone's up 5x, but if it's 2x, that's a huge problem. So I think that the real numbers, you know, 12, 24 months up, somewhere in the range of double, the reported numbers might not be that high.
Whew. Yikes. All right. Number three here. What's one industry trend you think will continue, but you wish would go away?
Look, sadly, I think the purchase market is going to continue to struggle to digitize.
Mm.
Happy to expand on that, but
I don't disagree. I mean, I think you're probably right there.
It's just finger pointing, you know. It's titles saying, "Look, at this point, I've got every major customer on the platform, and they're scaling across the country." And yet, even amongst them, when they ask each other to support digital closings, they say to each other that they don't do it, and it's because there's an employee in the branch that doesn't know, right? So there's just a long grind of an educational and behavior change problem, which, look, at this point, I'm fine with, because, look, my customers are growing and the problem is ameliorating itself, but it's going to take a long time. We had a great event in California recently where California is alive as of January 1. We brought together a bunch of the brokerages and title companies and lenders and prop techs and had a really good conversation about what would help each other. Like, you know, if you think about purchase, it's a matching function challenge, right? People have to know that they're both game.
Mm-hmm.
But look, I think purchase, it's going to take a while.
All right. And the last one here, what's one thing you believe will dramatically change or fade away in real estate as a result of tech advances?
I said last time that I thought that the appraiser, you know, was going to go away. I don't know. Honestly,
they just have better tech now, man.
Yeah. I mean, something I think is obvious. So I don't know if this is a prediction. And I made the exact opposite prediction years ago, is it's very clear that the purchase mortgage market is going to be a non-bank lender market in the future. And I thought 4 or 5 years ago that the banks were actually going to become resurgent and win. And the reason was because I thought, if you think about the future we're all working towards, which is the instant mortgage and instant closing, I walk in a house, I want this house, right? It's the bank you have an existing relationship with. If I'm a B of A customer, they know my cash flow into my bank account every month. You know, they can infer my job and my credit worthiness. So they are the ones who could have a mobile app that's like, yes, you can buy this house right now, right?
Yep.
They have the capital. They don't need warehouse funding, you know, blah, blah, blah. But look, the banks are exiting mortgage very hard right now, and it's going to be non-bank, I think, which is not a bad thing. But they think about the market differently. I think the banks are very focused on the end-to-end home buying experience and the journey of being a homeowner. They want to use mortgage to get you into the bank and then support you in your life. And the non-banks are more transactional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for people out there building tech, like you should have an opinion on that. You may think I'm wrong, but I think you should have an opinion on that because they have very different incentives, I think, around tech.
Pat, this has been awesome. I'm really thankful that you were able to come back on the show. It was great to hear some of the updates, the expanded vision, where Proof is headed, some of the challenges that you guys are taking head on. It was also interesting to hear some of the bigger problems I didn't realize existed. And now I have a new fear unlocked. So I appreciate
that. You know, we made it through this whole podcast though, talking about pudding. There's no pudding jokes. So
there's no pudding. There's no pudding in this. That's for sure.
Well, you know where the proof is, right?
If you guys don't, oh my gosh, your booths, you got to bring some, like, you literally have to bring something with like little candies that say proof, and then you can say the proof is in the pudding.
That's
and
what
you
put it,
you just little... peel the lid off, and there's literally proof in the. There's so many ways to go with this. I love it, Pat. Hey, before we close out, for those who want to know more about Proof and or get in touch with you, where do they go? How do they do that?
My, you know, I'm Pat at pick your either mill domain. I got two of them, .com. You can go to notarize.com or proof.com. And then, you know, the team as well, like hit us up on LinkedIn. If you're trying to talk to the product team or something like that, we're very responsive. We love working with customers and partners. And look, I think if we've demonstrated anything, we're going to stand the test of time. We're not going anywhere. We want to be your partner and figure this stuff out. So get in touch.
Good stuff, man. Can't wait to actually get a chance to catch up in person to one of the events later this year. But until then, we'll see you around.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to TechNest, the PropTech podcast. Find all the links and resources mentioned in this episode on technest.io. You can get future episodes delivered to your ears directly by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and all other major podcast apps.
Follow TechNest on social media to stay up to speed on new developments, resources, and announcements in PropTech.
Your support is greatly appreciated. There's two ways you can directly support this podcast. Share episodes you find interesting, and then leave a review of the show in the App Store.
From Nate and the TechNest team, thanks for listening.